Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. And make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our new text and voicemail line has been up for a couple weeks, and it's been fantastic. Save this number in your phone, 331-979-1369. Send all of your questions, comments, voicemails to us at that line, 331-979-1369. Well, bringing you back into a weekend filled with not necessarily NBA basketball, but the first week of March Madness, obviously St. Patrick's Day with this weekend. This is like one of my favorite times of the year, and I talked about this a little bit, Matt, on a solo pod I did earlier last week, and I said, I think this is out of any sport, this is one of the few weekends where collectively, I think as sports fans in general, it's the best weekend in sports. You've got a million games going on Thursday through Sunday, a lot of upsets, and I think if any college basketball fan out there can argue with me about this, but I think this was probably the best weekend we've seen in college basketball in terms of March Madness in probably a few decades, if ever.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't disagree with you. All of the drama that happened in the first round and then the round of 32 over the course of Thursday to Sunday was absolutely nuts. I mean, you had the crazy story of Virginia going down, the first ever 16 seed to beat a one seed. You had, you know, the great Loyola story, which for us Chicagoans has been extra fun. I mean, I had them beating Miami in the first round upset, but I did not have them beating Tennessee, and they did that again in dramatic fashion. Yeah, Michigan winning in dramatic fashion. You had, you know, other big name schools going down. UNC is out. Cincy's out. All of these games have been great. Other than Nova and Duke blowing their first two opponents out of the water, and I still think that, you know, I had Nova going all the way. But other than that, my bracket is totally jacked up and, you know, throw it in the garbage. But I don't mind because it's been that entertaining of a tournament so far.
Yeah, whether or not you're a fan of betting, if this is the weekend where you love, this was the past weekend where you loved throwing down bets on every game, you had some type of implication if you weren't a huge college basketball fan. I feel like for the most of us, our brackets are probably pretty busted up, especially first time a 16 seed has ever beaten a one seed. And all of these big time teams with the NBA prospects too on some of these teams, like it's kind of disappointing in a way if you're an NBA fan and you were tuning in to watch specifically for these NBA prospects. You look at like Arizona, DeAndre Ayton's already out in the first weekend. Trae Young out. He was out of the first game ever, which actually that was a very good game in overtime. Trae Young had quite the game, wasn't able to pull it off for Oklahoma. But Michael Porter Jr., he's out after the first weekend. Jaren Jackson Jr. and Miles Bridges are out for Michigan State. So I think in a capacity, it's kind of disappointing for NBA fans who were maybe trying to stretch two or three weekends out where they could get really an idea of these top prospects that are going to be drafted in just a couple months, an idea of how they play on the national stage. And it's funny, Matt, I looked at some of these guys that we were talking about as potential lottery picks or even back end of the lottery picks. And a lot of these guys, you know, there was more guys than not that I counted on my hands that were didn't have particularly great performances. And there was two or three guys that I was like, I don't think they're going to do anything. And they've been impressive so far. So I guess my question to you is, who's been the most impressive player, at least you've been watching or paying attention to this weekend, that's going to continue on that you said, hey, you know what? I don't know if we've given him enough talk as far as an NBA prospect.
I wouldn't say somebody that we've completely glossed over. His name definitely comes up, especially more recently as the Bulls look like they're going to be picking somewhere, you know, 7 through 10 as opposed to 1 through 5, because most of the bigs are going to be gone off the board, as well as Luka Doncic. It's the one and done, or not the one and done wings, but the two wings, both bridges, of Nova and Michigan State. Obviously, Michigan State, a big disappointment going out earlier than a lot of people had them going. But Mikal Bridges of Nova, personally, I mean, I've just been so impressed by how above the rest of the field Nova looks through the first two rounds of this tournament, and we'll see if they can take that momentum all the way. I mean, but they have looked just straight up dominant through their first two games on a completely different playing field than most of these other college basketball teams. And Bridges is a big part of that. He was kind of quiet in their round one game against Radford. They didn't really need him to be, but then he stepped up and had an even better performance in their second round victory, which was another blowout. So he's a guy that moving forward, and I'm thinking that we're going to see Nova make their way through the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight and into the Final Four. I'm excited to keep watching him play because, you know, I wasn't enthralled with the idea of taking either of the Bridges, but the Bulls do desperately need a 3-and-D wing. So I'm going to be watching him for as long as Nova's in this tourney.
I think somebody that I would point out this weekend that they're out of the tournament already, but has been fantastic over five games. In a stretch of games where it was either you win or you go home, and that player is Colin Sexton. So I know there's been a lot of talk about the Bulls needing to take a wing here, especially if they're going to draft between 8 and 11 or 7 and 11. The need is obvious there for the wing players, but I have just this awesome fascination with Colin Sexton. And I know there's been a couple analysts we've brought on to talk about college basketball that said they don't know if his game will really translate to the NBA. They don't know if he has, you know, one single elite skill. You know, he's very good at a lot of different things, but not one elite level like someone like Trae Young, where he can shoot the three ball from anywhere and he's got vision. But Colin Sexton impressed me in that first game against Virginia Tech, where they won 86-83, played 33 minutes. He dropped 25.6 assists and 3 rebounds. And for him to do that, and over the course of his five games too, even going back to playing Texas Tech during the SEC tournament, he had 27 points in that game. He had 31 against Auburn. He had 21 against Kentucky, 25 against Virginia Tech in their opening round, and then obviously only 17 against Villanova. But still, I'm fascinated by his game and his drive too. He's got that type of energy that, like, Chris Dunn, we talk about with Chris Dunn, like, where at times you look like he's fearless out there, and I think he isn't scared to go up against any other person, and I love that about players. He's got that fire and that passion that I think translates to the NBA, and a lot of his skills, his ball handling skills, I think I wouldn't be completely disappointed if they went and drafted Colin Sexton to play alongside Chris Dunn.
You're right. He definitely continued to prove himself after playing very well in the SEC tourney and winning them one of those games in dramatic fashion. I think I'm kind of leaning towards, and I know our buddy Ricky O'Donnell, who's been on our show a couple of times, is really high on Trae Young and said he would probably still lean Young over Sexton if you're talking about Bulls taking a point guard in this draft, just because of that elite shooting ability. And he also thinks that Young is a bit more of a creative and versatile passer than Sexton. And I would grant him that. But, and maybe it's just like the flashiness of everybody saying, oh, he's the next Steph Curry. I don't really know if I'm buying into that level of the hype. And ESPN and other media outlets have just been all over the Trae Young hype train. Yep. And so I feel like it's gotten kind of oversaturated at this point. And I like a lot of what Colin Sexton can do, specifically attacking the basket. His finishing around the basket needs to improve a little bit. Hey, guess what? Kind of like our buddy Chris Dunn right now. But he has the ability to push the pace to a furious pace and attack the defense before the defense gets set. And that, more so than taking, you know, 30-foot three-pointers, is what Fred Hoiberg wants to do. Yes, the Fred Hoiberg offense is a lot of three-point shooting, ideally, but it also needs to be attacking at a fast pace. And I think Sexton has a little bit better handle and ability to do that confidently at the NBA level than Trae Young, who is also pretty woefully undersized.
Yeah, see, I don't know. This is the debate I get into with people. Is it because ESPN jammed down every Oklahoma game down our throats for the last 3 months, and that's like why we're kind of oversaturated, that every outlet he could, you know, clip his toenails and we'll have an article about Trae Young? Is that why we feel this way? Like, I catch myself doing this a lot with a lot of players, and even in the NBA. Is it because the market's so oversaturated with just content from Trae Young and we're constantly seeing him? And, I mean, I'm not going to knock his game. He had a fantastic game in the tournament. 9 for 18, 28.7 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals. The six turnovers are huge, and obviously that's going to be a big problem translating to the NBA. But I'm with you, too. Like, I just, for a guy that's undersized like that and can shoot the way he does in college, I get it, but the perimeter defense in the NBA is like no other, and that's a no-brainer, but I don't know how that's going to translate, and I just like Colin Sexton's length, his fearlessness to go to the basket, and the grit that he plays with. So I'm with you. I really like him, too. The person that I was really disappointed, Matt, with in the tournament was Jaren Jackson Jr. In 2 games.
Yeah, he had a really rough turning.
18 minutes in the first opening game. He was 2 for 3 with 6 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 blocks. He was the type of player that was getting in a lot of trouble, in foul trouble early on. And then in the second game against Syracuse, where honestly, nobody can figure out how to play that zone against them, how to play offense against that zone. Michigan State had one of the best offenses in basketball this season in college basketball, and Jaren Jackson Jr. played 15 minutes. He was 0 for 4, 2 points, 8 rebounds, and 1 assist. So, I don't know. Maybe it's a streaky thing, and it has nothing to do with him going to the NBA or translating. But yeah, on the national spotlight, he did not look good in either one of those games. But what did you think about Miles Bridges? Consider the fact that Syracuse played that zone defense. You're not going to see a whole ton of that in the NBA the way Syracuse plays it. What did you think about Miles Bridges, though?
Yeah, I mean, definitely less of a disappointment than Jaren Jackson Jr. was. You nailed that on the head. I think if pressed right now to say, you know, if I had my pick between the two Bridges, I would probably lean towards Mikal Bridges over Miles Bridges. I mean, there's not a whole lot that separates them. I just think that Nova's Bridges has a little bit more of a NBA upside than Miles Bridges does. And, you know, I think has a little bit of an edge in athleticism, a little bit of an edge in becoming a consistent depth shooter in the NBA. I feel like Miles Bridges kind of regressed in that area a bit this season. So I wasn't wowed by anything Miles Bridges did in Spartan's couple of games. I am disappointed that Sparty got bounced early so that we couldn't hopefully see him have a bounce back game after a rough first 2 games in the tournament.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you here on Miles Bridges, just real quick. The first game, obviously, Michigan State not playing a whole competitive team in that first round. He played 35 minutes. He was 12 for 22, 29 points, 3 for 7 from 3, and 9 rebounds and 4 assists. But I look at that Syracuse game and people might kind of cringe a little bit. I just say that's kind of an outlier. That's the same thing with Jaren Jackson Jr. I feel like just you can't completely ignore the national stage of what it is, but maybe there was something going on or just not a good game. But Miles Bridges couldn't hit a 3 to save his life. He was 3 for 12 against that Syracuse defense. He only had 11 points. He played 35 minutes. He was 4 for 18 from the field and had 6 rebounds. I really like the way he can get up, though. I agree with your athleticism thing. That might be a problem down the road if you're trying to play him as, like, is playing him as the four or maybe even trying to squeeze him in the three, like sort of like a Tobias Harris. If he can continuously knock down that three, I could see it. But I like the way he gets up, though. I think he's sneaky in terms of the way he can get up towards the basket. We saw him throw down a alley-oop dunk against that Syracuse team. I think he's got some sneaky athleticism to him, but I wonder how that's going to translate to the NBA and where people might play Miles Bridges. But I wouldn't say I was disappointed either. I thought I saw a little bit more from Miles Bridges than certainly we saw from DeAndre Ayton, who is another person real quick, Matt. DeAndre Ayton, even though he did have 14 points, 13 rebounds, he can't play defense against any small player. Like Buffalo, the guy that he was guarding for Buffalo just ran circles around DeAndre Ayton. So I feel like that might be a big problem coming to the NBA.
Definitely. And then two other guys that I wanted to mention as far as that New Orleans pick that the Bulls are getting. And, you know, obviously everybody in that very tightly compacted Western Conference standings right now, Pelicans have dropped a few games recently. And right now it sits the Bulls would be getting their pick at 20. A couple of guys that are projected to go to, like in that area of the draft that we saw in this tournament, but kind of a disappointment that they were bounced early. Michael Porter Jr.'s little brother, Jonte, who in Missouri's loss to Florida State did essentially nothing, like had 2 points, I think. And then the heartbreaking play late in that Miami loss in round one in dramatic fashion that led to the Ramblers being able to hit that buzzer beater was the Lonnie Walker turnover. I really like Lonnie Walker as an NBA prospect, and I'm, you know, as excited as I was for Loyola in that first round, I'm disappointed we didn't get to see more of Lonnie Walker in this tournament.
Yeah, I was going to say Lonnie Walker did hit that shot late against Loyola to, I believe, go up. I think it was go up one or two. It was late. It was about like 90 seconds left in the game. So that was nice to see. I agree with you. I think he might be a little bit too, he might end up a little bit higher in the draft than maybe we think. I don't know if it's going to sneak down to that Pelicans pick, but since you brought it up, the Pelicans pick right now, Minnesota's at 18th at 40-31. And then it goes all the way down to the Cavaliers pick at 24 at 40-29. All these teams separated within a game, and there's five teams separated within a half game. So there's going to be a lot of movement. I'm hoping that maybe possibly we get a little bit of losing streak here from New Orleans. Better our chances with that second round pick, because yeah, I don't want it anywhere near the back half of that lot, like back half of the first round of that draft. So all, overall, really great weekend for March Madness. And if you're a basketball fan in general, and with the Bulls having two picks in the first round, hopefully you got excited. You watched a plethora of different teams. And if there's anybody excited and maybe you want us to talk about a little bit further that we didn't mention so far, text us at 331-979-1369. Shout out to the Loyola Ramblers again, heading to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 1985. Final question for you, Matt, here real quick. Will college basketball ever be relevant in the city of Chicago again?
What do you mean? After right now, because Loyola is relevant?
No, because like Northwestern made it for the first time ever last year, and then now Loyola's to the Sweet 16. Like before this, like college basketball in Chicago has been a wasteland, and maybe that's partly because the Bulls. In the 90s, the Bulls were so good with Michael Jordan here. The interest just drew towards more of a pro-town team, but will college basketball ever may become relevant to the point where they can continue to get guys to stay in Chicago? You ever think that'll happen?
I mean, I know. I wouldn't say that confidently. I enjoyed watching the Wildcats make a run last season, and I certainly am enjoying watching Loyola play in the tourney this year. But as far as either of those teams or like the UIC Flames or, you know, or DePaul, I mean, DePaul has been irrelevant for a long time. Remember when DePaul was like a team that mattered? Because I barely do. It was, you know, in my childhood. No, I mean, I don't really think any of those teams have enough of a pull to get, you know, highly touted All-American high school talent. I just, you know, I don't really see that happening. So, you know, anytime we get around to tourney time and we have one of those Chicago teams as a potential Cinderella in the tournament, I will excitedly watch and follow, and I'll be pulling for them. But I don't think that there's like a wave of momentum right now. Like, good for Loyola for what they're doing, but I don't know if this is going to come to, you know, create for either them or any other Chicago basketball programs at the collegiate level, you know, something with greater longevity of consistency and relevance on the greater college basketball land.
Yeah, I hate to tell Loyola fans to be, but don't think Porter Moser is going to probably stay around that much longer either, especially if they even make a run past the Sweet 16. We're going to take a break here on Locked On Bulls, but we will be right back, discuss kind of the Grizzlies' win, unfortunately, on Thursday nights, and also this absurdity that happened with the Cleveland Cavaliers over the weekend. Stay with us here at Locked On Bulls.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck, and on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, Matt, let's get into ongoing tank race for the Chicago Bulls. Many Bulls fans are pegging this as pretty much a dead. The tank is completely dead. I think I saw about three articles published in the last 72 hours that had something along the lines, including one headline that was straight up, the tank is dead for the Bulls. What do you make of this Grizzlies loss? Obviously, this Grizzlies win, this near Cavaliers upset this weekend. What's going on, and why is it that every time we ask for the Bulls to do one simple thing, they flip it around and completely do the opposite and frustrate our fan base even more?
I don't know. I am not a magician or a wizard who has all of the answers. I'm not a psychic. It's just undeniably frustrating at this point. The win against Memphis, I don't know. I can't remember if we talked about this yet, or maybe I was talking about it to somebody else. I was talking on a different radio show, but it was just like so predictably annoying because I was watching college hoops all day, right? And I got one eye on Bulls Grizzlies, and I see that the Bulls are actually trailing like mid to late fourth quarter, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they might actually pull off this tank win against Memphis. That, you know, end Memphis's 18 game losing streak or whatever it was at the time. And so I flip over to the Bulls game after having watched college hoops all day, and I tune in just in time to see the Bulls pull out the dumbest win in the history of Bulls basketball. And I'm sorry, if Adam Silver is calling up the Bulls and saying, hey, we're keeping an eye on you, and don't you break these new player rest rules, you better be playing, you know, Rolo and Holiday, he better be giving Memphis a call after Tyreek Evans fouled Antonio Blakeney on that last play, because that is some premier high-level tanking. We had a recently promoted G League player going ISO, no timeout call by Fred. It's like Fred did all he could to lose that game. Do you remember who he had on the court to finish that game? Because it was Campaign, Felicio, Vonleh, Zipser, and Blakeney. That was the five he finished with, and he got points from all of them. Like the Bulls' garbage roster, the Bulls' garbage lineup still somehow found a way to win, but I blame the Grizzlies. I blame Tyreek Evans for that horrendously blatant tank foul on Antonio Blakeney to give him those free throws to seal the win. It's just gross. It made me so mad.
Besides that, that was the other highlight too. I was going to bring up is I watched the first quarter, and Dylan Brooks ended up with, I'm pretty sure, 15 in that first quarter. I was like, oh great, Dylan Brooks is about to cook the Bulls again. This game is so absurd. The fact that the Grizzlies, their entire starting five, all scored over 15 points. The Bulls scrapped together with the team high of 20 points by Zach LaVine on 4 of 12 shooting. Shout out to Zach LaVine for getting to the line a ton in this game. He knocked down every single one of his free throws. He was 10 for 10. Noah Vonleh with 10 rebounds too. So just some highlights from the Bulls in general. But yeah, like you said, I don't know about that Tyreek Evans foul at the end. Like you had said, a foul to a G League player going ISO to try and cap the game, and you have a lottery pick that is a competent basketball player in Tyreek Evans making a horrendous foul on Thursday. Yeah, come on. The NBA needs to check that game out, check that film out again. But let's get to the more bizarre thing that happened with the Chicago Bulls this weekend. How in the hell did a team that was missing Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and Zach LaVine have a tie ball game against the Cleveland Cavaliers with less than 3 minutes left? How do you explain this?
Because the Cavs sat like eight guys or whatever it was.
That's true. But still, it's LeBron James.
I'd be like,
and he did his thing.
Yeah, okay, it's LeBron James, but they still were without enough. I think eight was a little bit of an exaggeration, but I think they sat six guys. You know, they had like Ante Zizic and Jeff Green and Calderon in their starting lineup. Like, gross. That's gross. That is a gross. And I'm sorry, who is this guy? London Perantes got minutes off their bench? Who the hell is that? I don't even know who the hell that is.
Yeah.
John Holland's got 11 minutes off their bench? Like, I don't know who the hell these Cavs are. Credit to Denzel Valentine, who had himself a hell of a game. Career high 34 points, career high 8 makes from downtown. Clearly, Fred was just trying to run most of that offense through Valentine as that game went on, because he could tell Valentine was feeling it. They were running a lot of screens for him, a lot of little, you know, trick plays to try and free him up outside the 3-point line. And some of it worked. Valentine also had himself some middle of the lane floaters that is like, dude, why are you still taking those? But he was the highlight. He was the highlight of that game. And I breathed a deep sigh of relief after the Bulls did in fact manage to lose that one. But I'm tossing that up to LeBron basically had to win by himself, and he did.
Yeah, I mean, you brought it up. Jeff Green played 43 minutes in this game. And then you had Jose Calderon. Like, I didn't even know minutes in the NBA and Jose Calderon were the same thing. Like, you could put those two things in the same sentence. But he had 36 minutes in this game. Jordan Clarkson played really well for the Cavs, too. But LeBron just did LeBron at the end, too. And especially in that fourth quarter, he had anything and everything that he wanted. But you brought up Denzel Valentine, which over the stretch of the last 2-3 weeks, and even I would say even at the start of the new year, Denzel Valentine has been putting things together. So I feel like that can be a conversation to talk about in terms of development overall of these guys, and I want to have that conversation when the season ends about every single player. But I think I've been pretty impressed about Denzel Valentine, and I did read a really good article up at The Athletic about how Denzel Valentine has trying to eliminate that floater that you just talked about, and how it's actually improving a lot of his shots and getting better shots on the floor. But shout out to Stefan Noe on The Athletic for that article. But it was great read. Denzel Valentine is really working hard, and it's showing. And, you know, as much as people want to rip on him and say, like, oh, he was still a lottery pick, he's never going to live up to that, blah, 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 blah. Denzel Valentine, for what he is and what he's been in this first year of him playing as a Bull. Like, last year, I just figured last year is just kind of a lost year. But this is major steps for Denzel Valentine, a player that I feel like a lot of Bulls fans wrote off. So shout out to him. And Cameron Payne, he actually didn't play that bad in this game. He was 5-for-11. He played 32 minutes. He had a double-double, 13-10. Only turned the ball over 3 times. So, you know, pretty solid game from him. And a Bobby Portis, obviously Bobby Portis has been collecting double-doubles like it's his job out there. 15-for-15, 2 assists, and he played really nice too as well in this Cavs game. Glad that they lost against the Cavaliers, though. I think I would have just been done watching Bulls basketball for the entirety of the season if they had somehow managed to pull out a game against the Cleveland friggin' Cavaliers.
You're right about the fact that Campaign had himself a decent game. 10 assists to 3 turnovers. You like to see that. I think I'm still safe. I wrote about it in a campaign column I did last week about
you in a campaign column.
I wrote a column about campaign that was essentially asking, like, are Bulls fans too hard on him? Have we been too hard on him? Do we owe him a bit of an apology, since he's played arguably not terribly since being inserted into the rotation? And my answer was like, maybe. But he went from being totally useless to a little better than totally useless. So let's not go crazy. But I did make a wager about whether or not he would finish the season with a certain stat line, and he's getting dangerously close to it. So we'll see what happens. I made a bet with one of our listeners. I think Jimmy, I want to say, one of our loyal listeners, interacts with us a lot on Twitter. If campaign finishes with a certain stat line, I think it's like double-digit scoring, higher than 42% shooting from the field, and fewer than two turnovers a game, I got to buy a campaign jersey and wear it to the first Cubs game I go to this season.
All right. Well, yeah, he is getting dangerously close.
And he's getting dangerously close to it.
Just in the month of March alone, he's shooting 46.8%, 9.5 points per game, 3.4 assists per game, 1.5 steals, and he's not turning the ball over that much, 1.1 turnovers per game, 71.4% from the free throw line, and he's 50% from the field, 50% from the three-point line, too, in the month of March. So, like I said, like we had that conversation about, if the Bulls feel like Cameron Payne might take a mini step forward next year, building off of what he's doing right now, they might look to shop Jerry and Grant. And I feel like that they could find a couple of suitors for a guy on a pretty solid contract that doesn't fit what the Bulls are trying to do here, but maybe it would be advantageous to move him to another team where maybe another team can figure out what he offers. But yeah, I feel like maybe Cameron Payne is using this as his opportunity to say, hey, I'm not completely useless. Check this out.
Yeah. Could be. You know, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if campaign suddenly became a useful NBA player, because this time last year we were all laughing at the Bulls front office to say, oh my gosh, that OKC trade was terrible. This kid can't play. Even his teammates are secretly telling members of the media that he can't play. And you know, we'll see what we have in him, and he's got another dozen or so games to prove what he can do. Starting with tonight against the New York Knicks, another big important matchup when it comes to the tankathon standing.
That was the most lukewarm pat on the back for campaign I've ever heard from someone. Yeah, that's what I'm saying too. Let's not get crazy here.
Like,
obviously, if people listened to this and I didn't say something like that, we would have got, oh, now you guys are backstroking on campaign. You guys, no, we're not. We're just saying, like, a guy can get better and people can be wrong about stuff. And it's like you said, it's only a handful of games. That's why, like, it's the same thing with Zach LaVine. Like, people who are like, oh, this guy sucks, don't pay him any money this summer, let him walk, blah, blah, blah. It's a 25 game sample. Cameron Payne samples 10 games. So let's, for both of those, let's not go crazy in the first year of our rebuild. And we're not saying Cam Payne's going to turn into this all-star or anything, but he's putting it together, and he's doing a lot better than I think anybody thought he was going to do coming off that injury.
Yeah, and I mean, just to give, you know, as you said, a small sample size, clearly the first few games in, he was trying to get his legs under him and find a comfortable spot in this rotation and figure out what he was supposed to be doing. So the four games he played in February, Cam Payne averaged on 8 field goal attempts, 37.5% from the field, on 3.3 three-point attempts per game, 15.4%, and 6.5 points per game. In March, in 8 games, he has upped his field goal percentage to 46.8, his three-point percentage to 50. Still taking the exact same 3.3 per game, but making 1.6 of them now. And scored 9.5 a game while also chipping in with some assists and rebounds. And like you said, keeping the turnovers under control. So small sample size, but maybe we can see campaign do more of that in the last dozen games of the season.
Quickly before we get out of here, New York Knicks, Chicago Bulls, super heavy implications for tonight's tankathon. I wonder if we'll see our friend Adam Silver there tonight too to take on this game, because think about it. The Bulls flew to New York, and they don't have Zach LaVine. They don't have Chris Dunn, and they don't have Lauri Markkanen. Vonleh did travel with the team, but he's questionable for tonight's game. So I wonder if the Knicks are going to parlay that with taking some of their players and maybe using this as a rest night. But we'll have to see. What do you think about Knicks-Bulls tonight? Are we going to see another head-scratching, hair-pulling, we're about to fall out of the eighth seed type of game? Or are you going to be comfortable that the Bulls can find a way to be a little bit productive early on in the game, but find a way to lose themselves this game?
I hope they find a way to lose. But I mean, the Knicks have been just no shame, full steam ahead tanking for, I don't know, the past 20 or 30 games. I mean, they went from a middling team that was still kind of looking at maybe making the playoffs. And then especially once Kristaps went down, they were just like, all right, screw it. We are losing forever and ever for the rest of time until that 2018 draft rolls around. And now, as you said, things are very tight. Chicago did reclaim the eighth spot with their loss to Cleveland. New York has a one more win. So the Knicks are 25-45, Bulls 24-45. Very important if the Bulls want to stay at least in eighth heading into this draft lottery that they lose to the Knicks tonight. And I'm thinking, without three of their key guys, it is certainly doable, but who knows? Denzel might go off for 40. We'll have to wait and find out.
And for those asking, like, oh, what's the big deal between 8 and 9? Or what's the deal with between 7, 8, or 9? Like, why is it that big of a deal if the Bulls fall one or two spots up or down? Well, it has implications for top 3 and number 1 overall. So if the Bulls fall from 8 to 9 tonight, which they could if they end up beating New York, they go from a 10% chance at a top 3 overall pick to a 6.1% chance. And they're only 2 games behind Sacramento for that 7th spot, which is actually a 15% chance at the top 3. So obviously it doesn't make... It's not a huge difference in terms of if you're going to end up drafting there, but the slight oddity that you might end up in the top 3 is just a little bit better if you're up at 8 or 7. So that's why we're kind of keeping a hold on some of these. Obviously, the Bulls have pretty much wished themselves away at a top 5 pick unless they decide to trade up, but it would be important for the Bulls if they can hang around that 7 or 8 spot with fingers crossed a 10 to 15% chance at a top 3 pick.
And we've got a couple of other tankers in action tonight that could have some winnable games. So Grizzlies and Brooklyn are playing tonight. Grizzlies, I think, are second right now after they picked up a win, 19-50. Nets 22-48. So really, it would be great for the Bulls if the Nets could get a win over Memphis, because the Nets have a better record and the Bulls are more likely to pass Brooklyn than they are Grizzlies at this point. And then you have the Kings hosting the Pistons tonight. The Kings have 23 wins, could match the Bulls 24 if they beat a banged up Pistons team at home. So two other games to keep an eye on.
Before we get out of here, we just want to announce that we'll be doing a giveaway on Twitter, a autographed picture of Kirk Heinrich, Bulls legend.
Kirky.
Questionably Bulls legend?
No question. Hands down Bulls legend.
Okay, Bulls legend, Kirk Heinrich. So this is a simple one. All you have to do is follow us on social media. Follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls. Retweet the tweet that is going to be out there later today. Retweet that. You'll be automatically entered to win. We're gonna name off the name on Friday that is the winner of the autograph, so make sure you do that. Follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com. In the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media if you want to win that Kirk Heinrich picture on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and make sure you're subscribed to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us, the Locked On Podcast Network, on Twitter and Facebook as well. We have a new text and voicemail line. That's 331-979-1369. Hit us up, say what's up, and let's hear your comments, Bulls Nation. But for Jordan Malley and Matt Peck, we are out. Have a great night, Bulls Nation. Enjoy Bulls and Knicks.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.